Chapter 6. Dear John. Early in the morning, after packing their bags for the day, three of the companions sat around dainty maple tables in the inn, sipping hot beverages and enjoying their breakfasts. Crisp blue skies in the early autumn light bolstered Lucy, Serena and Phlebas, who had spent much of the night tossing and turning. Torgon slept like a log. The cook had outdone himself this morning. Phlebas was nowhere to be seen. The chef delivered yet another platter, this time cut fruit, to the table, smiling at Serena as he did so.
"He's sweet on you,"
Lucy mumbled, between mouthfuls of the most delicious egg dish she had ever tasted.
"I think you exaggerate, Lucy."
Serena sipped at her mug of hot spiced tea and nibbled the fresh morning roll she had slathered with local honey.
"We'd explain the personal delivery of our meals by the chef," Torgon reasoned, as he chewed his third round of sausage with fried sweet onions. He winked at Serena.
"Perhaps it's Torgon who the cook prefers,"
Serena argued. Torgon's booming laugh nearly drowned out Phlebas, who had heard the last bit of banter as he walked in the front door of the inn.
"Leave Rena alone. You both know he's a happily married man. Don't start rumours."
Phlebas was not smiling. "We've got to think about repercussions to the chef."
"What's got your goat, Flea?"
Torgon wanted to know, not in the least circumspect.
"I met with John earlier this morning, down by the dock, where he was booking the transport into one of the ships of several stone statues that had been removed from the mine. The statues are being sent to the schools of learning around New Britannia to try and find an antidote to the magic used."
Phlebas stopped to thank the server and take a sip of the tea he had just been given.
"John is just as elusive as Ivan has been, but he has agreed to talk with all of us this afternoon at the Raven, the Dragon and the Stewpot about what he knows and saw that night." He added, "After he went back to work, I wanted to get some more information about the history of the valley. I just came from the Hall of Inquiry and Learning. The librarian didn't have many records. Her collection methods are sporadic and not very well organized, but what she has was helpful. She's an outlander too. Her memory is long but has gaps, and she only has things that she has collected in her own travels. Certainly not a full history of the valley even. She has no recollection of when that dragon was slain, as it was before she came to the valley, but she had a record of most of the keepers of the dragon bones, back over 100 years. Jenny was listed as the very last one."
"Why did they stop having a keeper of the bones?"
Lucy asked, perplexed, and then added,
"Why did they have a keeper of the bones?"
Phlebas set his empty teacup down and helped himself to a plate with a large, colourful omelette and some toasted bread. He tucked into the plate with gusto, while Torgon filled his teacup from the pot. Between bites, he explained, "Let's see. At first, it was to make sure no one took the dragon bones. People being people, they wanted souvenirs of the battle. After the dragon meat was divvied up between the people of Jade Valley, the keeper kept the bones from being taken from where they fell. That way, everyone could come see the size of it and remember how much damage it did before it was finally killed. The dragon skeleton was mentioned in one of the first records as a trophy from one of the many valiant deeds of Caelan Caitlin. He slew the dragon all by himself 100 years ago or so. Dragons have been seen flying over the valley ever since. Sometimes they attack, and that is why the valley has lookout towers surrounding it. I'm sure you've noticed them."
Zarina acknowledged, "I had wondered when I saw the towers."
Lucy and Torgon nodded in respect for the warrior who killed the dragon. Then Lucy asked, "Do you think the stone dragon in the middle of the markets has anything to do with what is happening here?"
"I don't think so, Lucy," Phlebas shook his head, then considered it for a moment before going on. "I don't know.
Maybe, but we have no information on that statue.
It could be just a statue. Next time I'm at the Hall of Learning, I will ask about it too.
Sometimes a statue is just a statue, Torgon added. But he too started thinking about the massive stone dragon in the middle of the markets.
And sometimes a stone is a dragon.
Lucy was not willing to give up so easily and stuck her tongue out at her brother. Before the pair broke into a more serious argument, Phlebas went on. The keeper of the bones was tasked with preserving the skeleton so that everyone could see it, and also so thieves didn't run off with bits of it. Shortly after it was killed, rumours about it coming alive in the dark started circulating. So the keeper was tasked with watching the bones for any strange behaviour. By the time Ivan's granny Jenny was keeper, hardly no one remembered the story of the dragon fight, and several bones had been dragged away over the decades. Phlebas looked over at Lucy to add, maybe the missing bones affect the spell, and that might be why it didn't finish forming last night. Anyway, the council decided that when Jenny died, they would not reassign the keeper of the bones, so she was the last official with that title. However, her family kept up the tradition informally, and Ivan is the current keeper of the bones. They stop thieves. Mostly the rumours of attacks at night do the job for them, and no bones have gone missing from the skeleton for at least a couple of decades. Seeing Zarina's eyebrows go up, Phlebas turned to her and addressed the question he was sure she was going to ask. She had no record of when bones went missing, Phlebas stated. None of the keepers have tried dispelling those rumours. They help to keep thieves at bay. Zarina grunted acknowledgement to the answer for her unspoken question.
Did you find anything out about whether or not dragon bones have come alive before?
Lucy asked.
Nodding, Phlebas answered, Lily Bird said there were rumours, but no one would admit to going to the graveyard after dark, and that's supposed to be the only time it has occurred. Though some folks talk as if they think no one will know who they are, so she had a list of some of those dates when people were rumoured to have turned to stone in the past. It's in her draft notes for a book she's compiling called The Folk Tales of the Valley series. Compelling work. She has noticed the stone statues have been appearing in the area for nearly three decades. This is not new here, but it has never been this frequent in the past that anyone can remember.
Zarina raised her eyebrows.
The librarian is a fount of information, I see. I'll have to take time to chat with her again myself before we leave Jade Valley.
First, it's time to go find John again and hear what he has to say on the subject, Torgon grunted. Then he argued, if those dragon bones have something to do with turning people to stone and it's getting more frequent, we are going to have to find the cause.
Right. Meet back here in an hour and we will head over, all right?
Phlebas made the decision they were all waiting for. Zarina hurried over to the vendors to fetch the few things Lucy asked her to find, and a few things she wanted for her own pack. Jade Valley Market was bustling that morning, and the cries of dock workers, vendors, seabirds, and children playing gave a sense of contentment and safety to the morning that none of the companions shared. Looking around, Zarina was heartened to see the signs of humanity carrying on even with such a burden of sadness and loss in the community. She had noted this morning that more stone statues had been found and were moved to the side of the docks for future transport after the bustle of the markets slowed. Zarina had watched the process the morning before as well. The sounds of commerce and village life lay like a thin protection for the peace of mind of these villagers. She knew that, like her, they could smell the fires that still dotted the countryside and could just faintly catch a whiff of the carcasses burning in pits just outside the town itself. She stopped to ask at the guild house for directions to the Raven the Dragon and the Stewpot before returning to the River Rider Inn.
Follow the road north, then round the bend, you'll come to it soon enough, Jeeves confirmed, pointing past the inn where she was staying. Fregenta Lane.
Thank you, Jeeves.
Zyrena left for her inn to meet the others.
After gathering outside their accommodation to organise their bags, the companions shouldered their packs and headed north along the road. It was only a short walk after all, and as the fresh sea air picked up speed, it soon blew away the burning smells from the morning pits. Then, at midday, as they rounded a bend in the dirt path, something delicious spiced the air. They followed the scent all the way to the Raven the Dragon and the Stew Pot at the next corner. The restaurant was on the main floor of what looked like a four-story wooden inn, with a lovely front porch just meant for resting on.
"Hello, anybody here?" Torgon's voice boomed out in the silence inside the Stew Pot.
There was a piano in one corner, and what looked to be a pipe organ along another wall. The bar looked sort of clean, mostly well-stocked, and there was a distinct odour of dragon stew simmering somewhere in a kitchen that made their mouths water. There were tables and long benches for travellers to use, scattered throughout the room, as well as a few small wood-round tables with chairs and stools at the bar.
"I smell the dragon and the stew pot, but I don't see a raven," Torgon spoke, tongue-in-cheek.
Lucy giggled at her brother's attempt at a joke.
"'Tis too early for that, brother. Ravens don't show themselves to strangers."
Finally, the back door opened, and a lovely young woman came through carrying a keg over her shoulder as if it were a feather pillow. In her other hand, she held a pamphlet called The Sticky Beak Flyer and was engrossed in her reading as she walked. She didn't look strong enough to pick up a heavy cloak, let alone a keg, but there she was, doing it right in front of them, one-armed with a full keg. After setting it nonchalantly on the counter, she continued to read, her nose nearly touching the page.
"Is your name Raven?" Torgon asked, while dodging the elbow to his ribs from his giggling sister.
The sound of Torgon's voice cut through her reading and gave the barmaid a start. She dropped the pamphlet, then became flustered.
"I did not see you there," she stammered. "Hello there, and welcome to the Raven, the Dragon, and the Stew Pot. I am called Liz, Henry's daughter."
She indicated over her shoulder at the figure sweeping the back door stoop.
"What can I bring you?"
"Ale, stew, and bread, with thanks."
Torgon took a step toward her as she started pulling the ale they requested from a spout on the open keg behind the counter into a large pewter jug, and asked, "Is Ivan's Uncle John around somewhere?"
"John? Oh, John?"
she asked, while keeping a careful eye on the stream of ale.
"The caretaker down the mine?"
"Yes," Torgon nodded. "He was going to meet us."
"Well, he's usually around the stew pot every day, about this time. But I've not seen him since early this morning, talking with your friends here."
She indicated Phlebas with a nod of her head.
"I bet trouble down the mine has caused this delay. This is usually the delays that keeps him from coming for his soup."
She bustled about them, setting down two jugs of ale and a basket of sliced bread.
"If you ask me, there's something amiss there. He told me the kobolds were on the verge of rioting over something they dug up. He had a meeting with the mining boss this morning."
"What do you think it is?" Lucy asked, while setting her pile of bags on the floor near the table. When she finished, she started filling mugs from the fresh pitcher of ale Liz had set on the table. As she walked to their chosen table with the large pitcher of ale and several mugs, she shrugged.
"I don't know. It has been a long while since the tour shut down, so I doubt it's more killing or disappearing. And then Merrick Dugan went missing a couple of months ago, too. There has been search crews looking for him in the tunnels."
"Who is Merrick Dugan?" Zarina asked after thanking Lucy for her mugful. "That would be Elaine's son. I believe she has daughters, too. Jenny's friend married into the Dugan family of Fragenta Lane." Phlebas answered the question before the barmaid could.
"That's right," Liz nodded. "He's usually around the place causing trouble with his friends and making stew with his sister," she went on sadly. Today we had to do without him again. He is not the same since returning to us.
Phlebas grinned at her and turned to ask, If old John is down in the mine, how do we find him?
Well, you may go into the mine and find him yourself. There's only one way into the mine after the fire and cave-in.
The barmaid indicated the small door at the back of the inn.
Through that way, around the back, and you will see a crypt for Charlotte, tucked in by the greenhouses there. Remember to watch your step in the dark. We don't want anyone else dying down there. It's too sad.
What fire? Zarina asked quickly.
Is that Charlotte the spider?
Lucy asked, before Liz could answer Zarina's question. Else? Torgan inquired at the same time as Zarina. Liz stood with her hands on her hips at the side of the table and tried to answer all their questions.
Well, yes, Jean can tell you all this, but after she came in, there was a passageway that opened up between the crypt and the mine. The miners have been using this entrance in the crypt ever since then. I don't know when it might be fixed.
She looked around conspiratorially.
I heard there are family spirits here in the mines, and they have been attacking anyone they come across. You aren't going to see me going down the crypt, no way. Even if John has sworn some sections are completely free of danger, like the fishing grottos.
Fishing grottos in a family tomb? Torgan was more and more confused, but willing to believe almost anything about the area at this point. He chuckled.
Well, yes, the mine has mostly dried up some time ago, and the Dugans started giving mine tours and fishing tours in some of the back damp caves, where they didn't find ore to mine. It kept the business going when there was no more silver. That's when they built the food court.
She started wiping the table next to them with a rag while continuing.
It was after all that, when the cave-in happened, it opened a passage to the family crypt, and some of the ghosts killed many tourists.
Liz stopped speaking when Lucy gasped, then nodded her head emphatically. She continued to explain,
Yes, this is true. That's when the family hired the kobolds to dig a new entrance to the mine further away, and to fill in the gap that opens the family crypt to the mine itself. They are not finished yet.
She stopped scrubbing at the table to say,
That old mine entrance is covered over by greenhouses now. You would never know there had been a mine there if you didn't ask me.
She paused before adding,
This hardly seems right, these spirits wandering around a mine like that.
Liz shuddered, then shook her head and sighed with real loss. She added,
Inside, to find your way around, there is an information booth just inside the entrance with the map on the bulletin board to the left. It will give you some guidance to find the food court and the other areas of the mine. Stay out of the ones marked danger and you will be fine.
She smiled unconvincingly.
That is where John usually does his business, I believe, at the food court counter.
Both Zarina and Lucy followed Liz into the kitchen and asked more questions about the history of the mine, and the barmaid answered as she dished up their bowls of dragon stew. Torgan was sitting at the bar with the bowl that Liz had handed him before filling the rest of the bowls. Kitty was at his feet, eating a bowl of dragon kibble that Liz had placed on the ground for her. Torgan and Kitty were both shoveling food as fast as they could, and weren't paying any attention to the talk around them. Still, at the long table, Phlebas took out a parchment and ink from one of his packs. With quill in hand, he swiftly scrawled a couple of letters. Damiath Nara, Lyceum Centre of Learning, Brittany, Novia. Sir, stopping whoever is controlling the dragon bones from continuing with their plan to use magic of the ancient obsidians in this manner is moving forward. I believe we have a solid lead to follow here finally. You have my full report sent earlier today. We have not discovered the source of the magic yet, but have decided to question a witness of one of the times that this magic was used. We go to interview him today inside a mine that people have been disappearing from regularly, and also getting killed in as well. I know we are getting close to finding an answer. I can feel the magic afterglow strongly here. I will write again when I have some more concrete knowledge and not just rumours. This dragon, whether or not under the control of mages using obsidian magic, will destroy the whole valley, not just the farm animals, if we can't stop it from fully forming. I have not yet found the shard that you suspect is involved. With respect, Phlebas. And one other. Treda Moonwalker, Lyceum Centre of Learning, Brittany, Novia. Ma'am, my group have discovered that there may be some obsidian shard magic in use here in Jade Valley. I spoke privately with a caretaker of a local mine who is quite concerned with the kobold miners who are skittish at best, working near humans, but seem to be holding some secret back from him. Also, with unprovoked attacks by liches, and with the disappearance of residents and the subsequent reappearance as stone statues of themselves. The governor was correct. There is some malign of spirit here. I can't place the source yet, but we are getting closer. You have my report from last night. The dragonbones turning were not the first attempt at this magic. Turning Novians to stone with magic is not something I've heard about before. I don't know the reason for that yet either. I am having several of the stones shipped to you. Please see if the magic that binds them is reversible. Are they truly lost? I had a restless sleep, and I'm sure the others did too. I left them at the inn early today to go search out more history at the Hall of Inquiry and Learning. Now we are meeting John, and I will learn more about what he suspects, then report back. I don't think John is as forthright as he could be about what he knows, but he does know something, and I'll find out what. We are going to go ahead into the Dugan family crypt and silver mine, where he is the caretaker. This magic uses shards. It smells different and feels different in the middle of my body somewhere. Greasy, oily, and somehow warped in some way. I have informed Damiath Nara. See if anybody in the library has heard of old magic being revived anywhere else in Novia using shards, and send what they find to me here, please, care of the inn. With respect, Phlebas. P.S. You were right. Travelling is harder than I remember from my youth. Will you take these to the mail for me? Phlebas held out the sealed parchments and a few coins to Liz when she brought his stew over to him.
Yes, certainly, sir.
She placed the bowl of stew in front of him, then tucked the money into her apron pocket and took the empty pitchers off the table.
I'll get those papers after I've had a wash. No need to get gravy on your letters. Would you like more ale?
Yes, please, Phlebas nodded. Later, after they'd eaten, she still seemed adamant about not going into the mine, but did take the time to lead them over to the very strange entrance to a mine, the crypt. Liz kissed each of them once on each cheek before sending them off.
Give John an hello from me and tell him his seat is kept warm for him when he's back topside.
This stone tomb, which served as the entrance to the Dugan family silver mine on the south side of the Raven the Dragon and the Stewpot Inn, was sandwiched between the inn and the inn's full greenhouses. There were no indications that it was anything other than the resting place of Charlotte the Spider. Why on earth would they build a mine near a family crypt? Torgon was still confused. The ancestors would be disturbed by the activity, wouldn't they? He was truly perplexed and barely understood the concept of keeping dead bodies in the first place, as the customs he was familiar with involved a pyre and flame for the dead to help them on their way to the other side. But he was ready. His axe was out. The opening was a tight fit for him, but he wiggled through the lid after Zarina followed Phlebas inside. Kitty leapt into the crypt right behind him.
Maybe they had no choice. Maybe the ancestors wanted this.
Zarina shrugged while she studied the map on the bulletin board.
And that's why the silver was discovered.
She had become accustomed to the various ways someone in Novia could fall into an entrance to some other location, and not all of them friendly or safe. Her first experience was looking too deeply into a beautiful old mirror that led to a night of battle she would not ever forget. By now, this should seem normal, but it never did. Dead ancestors guiding the living to find silver, Phlebas joined in. That hardly seems likely. I thought she said digging the tunnels for that spider led to the discovery. That seems far more probable.
Where's Lucy?
Zyrena asked Torgon. She was fixing something in her bag. She'll find us soon enough, Torgon indicated back over his shoulder to the exit. Let's get over to the food court and find John the caretaker. Still outside the inn, Lucy had accidentally dropped several packages of herbs out of a hole that spilled from one of her bulging small bags. She had been scooping up the small packets and then stuffing them back into a different bag, all the while enjoying peering through the windows of the full greenhouses nearby. When she finally looked up from her perusal of the plants there, she found her friends had gone into the crypt without her. 15 minutes later, Lucy was the last to catch up to the group. After a quick glance at the bulletin board to get her bearings, she jogged over to the food court and found the others arranged in comfortable positions around a wooden small table in the middle of a large room. She was a little out of breath when she scooted in. She lifted a chair from a neighbouring table, set it down, and plopped into it. Then she looked around the mining cafeteria where they sat, as each of her companions stared quietly into their unknown futures while they waited. There was a storytelling corner that had colourful cushions to sit on while listening to stories the miners told. Further along, she could see a shop set up with mining souvenirs and clothing for sale, and a long wooden counter dividing the kitchen from the eating areas with many small table and chair combinations where they sat now.
"Where's John?"
she asked, looking around the empty room. Phlebas gave Lucy a moment to compose herself before he began to speak. "He wasn't here when we arrived, but there was part of a letter left on the bar." It began mid-sentence. "The dead got up and started killing the tourists. Ain't seen nothing like it afore that, Owain. The spirits of the Dugan family got up out of their caskets and followed some kind of lich or something into the mines. They killed a bunch of people who were down for a tour, too. It was carnage, and took a long time to clean up and find them all without running into one of them liches while doing it, too. They ain't come back to their resting spots yet, neither, and that's why the family crypt is still empty. Got to round them up somehows and get them back into that family crypt. The family decided to close the mine to the public. That's when Merrick disappeared again, you'll remember him. Gone for months he was. That kobold miner Orituk found him wandering around an old unused tunnel deeper than kobolds usually dig. He was gone for so long that the family was just thinking on setting up a memorial. They were all relieved to have Merrick back, although he's not said much about what happened to him, and don't seem to have memory of any part of his life before making his way out of the depths of the mine where he'd been. He ain't the same, neither. He'd been changed by them tunnels, doing who knows what to stay alive. We'd give up on seeing him again, and then he popped right out of the mine like he had just gone down this morning. Stinky, though. Smelled like an old dragon fart." The page ended, and there was no more writing on the back, either. She looked up, confused. "We think he was part way through writing that," Phlebas explained, holding up lemons found near the writings. Then he shrugged. "Or possibly it's disappearing ink. Can't tell. Maybe both." He held up two other blank pages that had been found with the partial letter to Owain.
"There was this, too."
Zyrena handed Lucy the other paper they had found.
"Look.
John. Dis note for you only. I gotta talk in your ear. Come on over to the mining office in the Kobold Quarters. Now. Orituk, Captain, Kobold Mining Company." After reading, she handed the letters back to Phlebas. Then Lucy took a moment to think about what she had read, and finally asked,
"What now? Still fine, John? Think he's still over at the Kobold Quarters mining office?"
"Yes," Phlebas nodded several times. "Whatever is going on down here, we need to find John. There is far too much coincidence in the lich attacks here on the innocent, right when stone statues and dead animals started becoming more common, let alone dragon skeletons coming alive. Phlebas found himself searching deeply into the faces of those dear to him around the table. He sought a connection with each of them. After he had their full attention, he smiled. It was time to give a rousing talk to inspire the group. Treda Moonwalker had warned him at this moment in any group's adventure. They looked ragged and anxious. He began. We need to find a way to stop whoever is trying to form a dragon from those bones. You know this. We all know the dangers of a full-grown dragon attack upon a small village like this. Not one of us looked away when the mist dragon formed in the graveyard last night. You were all ready to battle, and not one of you tried to flee. Wryly grinning, he continued, and I know you are each just as dedicated to finding answers as I am. Thank you, my friends, for that support. I know the townspeople are all preparing as best they can for whatever is facing them, but they have no way to fight something as overwhelming as magic that makes dragon bones fly, or something that can turn villagers to stone. Phlebas paused for a moment before going on. He finished carefully. We can only hope their preparations will keep them safe. Whomever is behind this must be stopped before they manage to succeed. I know none of us are looking for a battle, and I will do my best to avoid any further confrontation, let alone whatever else it is we are getting ourselves into here in this underground lair while we search for John, the elusive caretaker. There won't be any reinforcements. Let's go. No one moved. Zyrena snorted.
That was the worst pep talk I have ever heard. We are alone. We might die. And we might fail. No one is coming to help us. Come on, say something a little more encouraging, won't you?
Phlebas looked at Torgon, who looked at Lucy. Phlebas turned to Lucy and raised his eyebrows as if to say, Your turn. Lucy shifted, uncomfortable all of a sudden. After clearing her throat, the quiet woman gathered her thoughts and then spoke clearly and with passion.
I see before me the smartest, strongest, most caring people that I know. With our combined skills, we can manage anything we find. I am absolutely certain of it. There isn't much reason to wait, is there? I mean, we know why we do what we do. We are the best at what we do. And it's time to go do it. We stand together. We do not flinch. We find the truth of the matter. She finished with a grimace. Let's go stomp these liches.
Gracefully, she rose from her chair to turn and point her sturdy arm out of the food court and across the mine's entrance to where she had seen the kobold miners' quarters on the map earlier, before striding boldly out of the cafeteria. Torgon muttered, Go get 'em, sis, as he petted Kitty behind her ear. Oh! Looking up into the silence after Lucy's speech, Phlebas hastily collected his bags. Then, jumping quickly out of the way of an empty mining cart that came barreling by on its track. The mining cart was a relic from the public tours of the silver mine. It had been used to give the locals and occasional outlanders tours of the area before ghosts and liches started attacking everyone.
See, now that is a pep talk.
Zyrena nodded, finding herself raring to go tear into the unknown. She finished by saying to Torgon,
Sometimes action is the best pep talk of all. Let's go find some answers.
And with that, strode out behind Lucy and Phlebas. Torgon, bringing up the rear, hesitated only a short time. Kitty, stay here, he quietly ordered, before gathering his supplies back up and stepping out behind his group of friends. Kitty didn't hesitate and made her way to the cushions on the floor of the reading corner. Circling once or twice, she had herself curled up in a comfortable napping spot within seconds. Torgon could hear her purring as he walked out of the room. Directly across from where he stood was an entrance to the kobold quarter and mining office, located somewhere down a dark tunnel behind a large wooden statue of a kobold. It had a barrier that said keep out, blocking the passage, but Lucy and the others had moved some of it out of the way by the time he caught up.